Hello, everyone. My name's Alicia.
Hi, I'm Dr. Matadi.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Clark.
And this week, UMHS celebrates Match Day, which is what everyone looks forward to towards the end of fourth year. While matching into a residency program marks the end of medical school, it's also the beginning of a new chapter in the journey to practicing medicine. UMHS reached out to us to kind of talk about our one-year experience post-match, we'll talk about what we wish we knew, what we've learned, and kind of go from there. March is also Women's History Month, so we're going to be talking a little bit about barriers and the importance of representation in medicine. So first off, I'll give the other women on the panel to kind of introduce themselves and share a little bit more about their background. So Dr. Clark, can we start with you?
Sure. As I stated, I'm Dr. Clark. I'm a first year resident at Authority Health Community Psychiatry Program located in Detroit, Michigan, and we serve Detroit and the metropolitan area. I am originally from St. Louis, Missouri, and you know, like the other wonderful doctors on this panel, I graduated from UMHS as a medical graduate. Just a little bit about myself. Obviously, I have a super passion for mental health, particularly in the community health community setting, underserved minority communities, and I also have a passion for children and adolescents. So a long-term goal is to go into child and adolescent psychiatry and focus on that community.
All right, and I'm Dr. Sarah Motadi, PGY1 psychiatry also. I got matched into Charles R. Drew University in Los Angeles, California. I was actually transferred to UMHS and looking forward to meeting all of you guys and talking about what are the important topics, what now, what next, and looking forward to engage with you guys later this afternoon.
Yes, so I'll talk a little bit about myself. My name is Dr. Alicia Kaiser. I am from Burlington, Ontario. I started at UMHS in 2016 and graduated in October 2020. I am a PGY1 neurology intern in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's a little bit about me. So why don't we talk a little bit about our journeys into why we chose UMHS and talk about why you both chose the residency program that you both matched in.
Okay, I'll start. Actually, good question. I actually chose, funny thing is I chose UMHS I found out about an informational session. I was visiting my now fiance in Atlanta and they were having a session in Athens, Georgia, which is like an hour away from there. And so I decided to just drive down to check it out. And I think from that moment, I was really interested in the program, but kind of hesitant, obviously, another country, being from the States and everything. So I needed more information. But after going through the interview process and then talking to Michelle and some of the other people that I think that's what kind of sold it for me. But on my journey through UMHS is, I've met a lot of friends that I actually continue to keep in touch with. And there's a ton of residents here in all different specialties in the Michigan area. And I've bumped into people just by happen chance that were maybe like a year, a semester behind me or ahead of me that I at UMHS in the hospitals on different occasions. And so it's always been pleasant just to see, where everybody ends up. And it's like, so far, it's just been an exciting experience just to know that UMHS students are just progressing in the medical field and just, all over the place, spreading the word about the medical school.
Yeah, and I can jump on that just to say that I initially applied for family medicine and psychiatry. I got interviewed to both. And I think really the pandemic just really changed the way I was thinking and what was really needed in our community right now. And, of course, California being such a touchy topic as far as like residency and whether or not people would get in, I still applied, even though a lot of people were telling me like, no way, it's not going to happen. And just, don't waste your time. And I ranked it number one. And I just stuck to my gut and I knew that I had a feeling, this is where I belong. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, so this is like my home. And I just wanted to have that continuity of care, like, you know, being born and raised here, wanted to practice here as well. And just seeing the way mental health affected everybody in during the pandemic really made me want to switch to psychiatry. Also the work-life balance as well, where I was in my life at that time, I really felt like mental health was the place to be. And, you know, I got really fortunate and I matched. So this is definitely a success story, not just for me, but for all of you prospective and, you know, people that either apply to California, you don't know yet, you will know on Friday. But this is the road that's going to open to all of you guys. You know, it can happen. It will happen. We're all amazing medical students, medical school graduates, and you are just as good as anyone else that's applying as well.
Thank you so much for sharing, Dr. Mutari. I guess a little bit about me as to why I chose UMHS. You know, just like any other pre-med student, I was just, you know, walking around in my auditorium in undergrad, and there were a bunch of medical schools, you know, set up with their booths. I was picking up pamphlets and then, you know, stopped by UMHS. And while reading like the clinical rotations, I came across that we have an affiliation in Ontario. So that really sparked my interest. And eventually speaking to the representative, I was able to realize that, oh, I'd be able to do a couple of rotations in Canada. So that was like one of the most distinguishing points as to why I chose UMHS. And I was able to do my core psychiatry rotation and also a geriatric psychiatry elective rotation in Canada. So that was awesome. Being Canadian, I wanted to be able to gain Canadian healthcare experience alongside the US, where I was doing a majority of my rotation. So that was a good distinguishing point for me personally. And yeah. And I guess another thing is, you know, how UMHS is very family oriented. You know, they really emphasize the fact that you will not be known as a number, you'll be known as your name. And that was true. Like when I had gone to the island, all of my professors knew me by my name, and I'm still in touch with them till this day. And, you know, they were my biggest cheerleaders while I was in basic sciences and throughout clinical sciences, and they're still cheering me on throughout residency. So it's been really nice.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have to echo that, Dr. Kaiser. I remember because I have friends who went to other schools like Ross and St. George, and those are bigger schools. And I thought at the time that UMHS was kind of just the right amount. It wasn't too small and it wasn't too big, but it was a nice home feeling environment. Even though I was in another country, I didn't feel, you know, out of place. Everybody made you feel welcome, the professors, the other students. And you're right, it was like one big family.
I agree. So I don't know if I shared as to why I chose neurology. I can kind of talk a little bit about that. So neurology, I mean, for me, you know, I think I started neurology my fourth semester, and it was known to be one of like the hardest subjects in medical school. And so I went into the mindset that I'm going to hate this course, absolutely hate it. But then when I started, you know, neuroscience, neuroanatomy, and I had Dr. Doherty, may he rest in peace, as my professor, that changed everything. I just fell in love with the subject, and he taught it so extremely well. And then eventually for that class, I became a teaching assistant. So towards the end of basic sciences, I like took a step to reflect that, wow, I really enjoy learning neuroscience, neuroanatomy, and I love teaching it as well. So this is something I definitely have to explore when I, you know, start my clinical rotations. And when I started third and fourth year, every neurological case, I was like super intrigued. I wanted to learn everything about it. I just liked the critical thinking aspect and, you know, localizing the lesion, like the thorough physical exam component that comes in neurology. And it's a growing field. So those were a couple of things that really pulled me towards neurology. And by the end of fourth year, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And yeah, now I'm here.
I think there's a question that's asking about what we've noticed program directors look for in psych candidates. And I can go first, and maybe Dr. Clark, you can add on. For me, and this is something that, you know, we are in a pandemic, and definitely you know, research used to be like the talk, and especially for, you know, research is always very important. But I think with all of my interviews, especially psychiatry, it was more of like, what are you doing out in the field? What are the clinical things that you're doing that you're going out there? And what I did is once the pandemic hit, I volunteered with the Medical Reserve Corps in Long Beach to help with COVID. We had like a shelter in place. We had something called the Rapid Assessment Clinic, which is pretty much, I don't know if you guys remember during the pandemic, all the doctor's offices were closed. There was like nothing open. You weren't allowed to go to the ER unless like you were literally like on the floor dying or unconscious. So this shelter tent, this is where everyone went to get taken care of, like UTIs, shortness of breath. We had a lot of COVID positive coming in at that time. So those are the things that they look for. They want to make sure that, okay, what were you doing this whole time? I know scribing is a really big thing here too, but a lot of people just wanted to see, do you know the population that you're trying to apply for? Like, are you working in communities if you're applying for a community hospital? Are you trying to go into that field and really assessing the population? Are you really trying to understand these patients? Because a lot of times, you know, we just apply and then not really know the population that you're applying for. So those are one of the biggest things that they were looking for, is like actual active field work, a clinical work with the population that they serve.
I would say that's definitely at the top of the list as far as your interest. And I think just having a genuine interest in mental health and having, you know, explaining or showing ways, displaying ways that you've, you know, either contributed to that community or you've participated in things related to that community. And one of the biggest things that I found as far as psychiatry on the interview scene, they just want to know that you're who you genuinely show who you are as a person. That was a huge part of it, them getting to know you in the interview and just having a genuine feel about who you are, your character, you know, what you, you know, what you have a passion for, and being open and honest about that, you know, and understanding that none of us are perfect. We all have a quote unquote things, you know, challenges that we faced, or some people might call them red flags, but just being able to explain, you know, how those things impacted and helped you grow. That's a big thing. I mean, and it's probably similar in other fields, but I know in psychiatry, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, to answer those questions, but show them that, you know, this is what made me a better candidate, or this is what made me a better medical student along the way.
And let me tell you, in all of my interviews, no, I have done so much research, and like even in my electives, so I did a lot of psych electives in Atlanta, and I did, you'll see with the clinic, there's a lot of TMS clinic, a lot of opportunities for research. I did so much, and not one program asked me about my research work or my master's work, nothing, my thesis, nothing. It was all about, what have you been doing? What are like some active, they want like movement. They want something that's like, that they can actually work with. So it's just, I don't know, Dr. Clay said, did you, or Dr. Clark, did anyone ask you about your research? I don't know.
I mentioned it, you know, I mentioned, cause I did, you know, grad school while I was at UMHS, and I discussed some of those things, but you're right. It was more so about what, because I was interested in community, you know, community health. So what are the things that, you know, I did in that space, you know, was pretty much more at the forefront of our conversation.
Yeah, for me personally, I feel like the programs that were research heavy, they all asked me about my research. They all asked me about my case report publication, but majority of the programs didn't really. It was something that, yes, you could talk about, but it wasn't like the distinguishing factor on where you're going to be placed on the rank list, I felt. So it's, if it's there, it's there, but yeah. I think I had a question. Someone asked, can you speak on the challenges of residency match as a Canadian? This is a really good question. So for me personally, you know, being a Canadian citizen, we are going to have to apply to specific hospitals that offer a visa, either a J1 visa or an H1B. So obviously that was a challenge, but just having prepared my application in such a way where I can stand out as much as possible was helpful, you know, and that came from day one. Like day one during basic sciences, you know, I was a teaching assistant all throughout medical school, and I was still TAing during my fourth year. I was, you know, participating in any sort of like opportunity that I could get to like publish a case report during my clinical rotations with my preceptors, and just volunteering in the community, even like during COVID, you know, in-person volunteering was not allowed, but I still looked for virtual opportunities, like ways to kind of portray myself as like as a leader, leadership qualities, as a collaborator, something that makes me scholarly. Like these are some of the qualities that program directors look for in a resident position. So yeah, as long as you have a good strong application and you're authentic, the sky is the limit. You know, it's not going to restrict you from getting an interview, and of course scores matter as well. It's kind of like a screening depending on what specialty you match into. So as a Canadian, it's generally known that you have to score a little higher. But I don't think that'll be the make it or break it point when it comes down to the rank list. They really want to see your true self. Like, will you show up to work on time? You know, are you going to be a team player in our residency program? Like, will you be supportive? Will you be kind? So those qualities matter a lot more. So it was challenging, but not as much as I thought it would be when I read blog posts online. And we also get a lot of support from UMHS during the match process from the New York office. You know, they kind of guide us throughout the entire process, whether you're applying for the Canadian match or the American match, they will kind of guide you through that. So that was really, really helpful.
And I think just transitioning to like the match process, since this is match week, just the emotions, I'm sure all of you guys are just so excited. Whoever got matched, congratulations, and whoever is looking into getting matched next year, congratulations as well. You're just getting that one step closer to the end line. A lot of emotions, I can tell you. For me, I was really, really obviously happy, but because I have a family here in Los Angeles and I really wanted this LA one, it was the most anxiety riddled week of my life. Just I'm waiting until Friday, because of course the next question is where are we going? Uprooting your family, like, you know, just trying to like move into a new place and try to get, you know, start all over and start fresh. I know that can be very, that can cause a lot of anxiety. So definitely hang in there for those who got matched but don't know where and is anxious to know where. But you know what, you did it. You're already one step closer to start residency and start practicing. So I would say just really focus and have a really good time. And those that are prospective, this should be a lot of motivation and encouragement for you guys, because you can see that, you know, UMHS, we're doing really well with going into residency and such. So keep up the good work, UMHS.
I think there is another question. Could you please elaborate important things to that can be helpful matching into neurology, neurosurgery? Good question. I think one of the most important things is getting a strong letter of recommendation. Especially if you're applying for a certain specialty, you want to be able to get a letter of recommendation from that specialty. So that's number one. Number two would be doing an elective within that specialty, showing your dedication that, yes, this is a specialty you want to match into, and being authentic on your personal statement as to why, you know, you want to go into neurosurgery or neurology. And I think doing electives at hospitals that offer that residency program. So we are able to do, our electives at affiliated hospitals, and we have the option to do it at non-affiliated hospitals. That just takes a little bit more planning ahead of time, but it's definitely possible. It's definitely doable. So those are, I think, the big four factors that go into, showing program directors that you're really dedicated into this field, and will make you stand out. And I also have another question. So how hard is it to apply to family medicine in Canada, since you're not doing family medicine rotation in Canada during third and fourth year? Awesome question. So matching into Canada is a hard process, but the gateway to get into a Canadian residency program is having a letter of recommendation that comes from a Canadian MD, or a letter of recommendation from the US. But I gaining Canadian healthcare experience is the most important thing. And so having done my elective rotation in Canada and having done my core psychiatry rotation there, you know, that would allow, like, I didn't have to request that letter of recommendation from those preceptors. They were willing to write it for me because I, if I was to apply to Canada, but I didn't. But if you show up on time and if you do the hard work, then there's, you know, there's, they would be willing to write you a letter. And also, we do actually have a family medicine elective offered at Ontario Shores. You can only do that in your fourth year. So that option is available. And yeah, I think you also, going off of that, we can do elective rotations at non-affiliated hospitals. So during my fourth year, I actually was thinking of initially applying to Canada, but because of COVID, my match line kind of got disrupted and I had to apply to NRMP before the CARMS match. So, but non-affiliated hospitals, we can definitely do our elective rotations there. I did 2 weeks at the University of McMaster for adolescent medicine. And I also had 4 weeks of elective rotations booked at the University of Ottawa and the University of Toronto. So that is definitely doable. It just takes a little bit of advanced planning. But yes, we do have that option available with our affiliate. Oh, hi, Dr. Moon.
Hey.
So this is Dr. Mungli. He is one of the professors on the island joining us.
So we just wanted to welcome you, Dr. Mungli. It sounds like you guys are trying to work out the audio over there at the auditorium, but I just want to let everybody know Dr. Mungli is going to be on as the facilitator from the UMHS campus, and he will be helping us facilitate the questions in the audience there from any of the students. So welcome, Dr. Mungli, and welcome all of the UMHS students there in St. Kitts. I think while they're setting up, I think we had another question come up. It says, does it look good to get a lot of letters of recommendation? Honestly, 4. That's what I focused on, I think, when I talked to my other fellow applicants. 4 is a good number, and just 4 good letters, not a lot of letters. It's really the quality, not the quantity. If you have 3 awesome letters, then you're still ahead of the game. If you can focus on getting letters in your areas that you definitely want to apply to, that's kind of key. And just doing your research on how many letters the program requires specifically for their area. So I know in psychiatry, typically a lot of the programs said at least 1 letter. There were some isolated cases where they said 2, but at least 1 letter for psych and, you know, and other letters. I think I had 4. I had 1 from psych, 1 from pediatrics, internal medicine, and family medicine. And my focus was just make sure that I had good letters from people that I connected with. So focus on good quality letters and also getting at least 1 to 2 letters in your area that you're interested in going in.
Yeah, I also did the same thing, Dr. Clark. It's so crazy. We're like exactly the same, but please. But because I was applying to both specialties, I wanted to have a variety. And like Dr. Clark said, it's definitely the quality. ERAS will give you up to 4 slots. I would say use them all up, even though you can just, I think it's like some people do 3, just do 4. It's not, you know, you can get letters of recommendation. Just make sure you do a stellar job. I also did a variety. I did surgery, internal medicine, family medicine, and psychiatry programs like psychiatry, the one that I wanted, just typically ask for just 1. But it's also good. I don't know. It could be case by case, but you know, my thinking is it's good to show that you're able to do all disciplines. You're able to excel in a variety of disciplines. So that way, you know, it looks like, you know, you do well in everything, not just 1 specialty. They want to see if you can branch out to other things, because most likely your rotations is not like for psychiatry. Your first year, I'm doing 4 months of inpatient medicine, 4 months of neurology. I'm doing 2 months of outpatient family medicine. So it's not just strictly psychiatry. You're doing a lot of things other than psychiatry. And then once you get closer to the end, that's when you focus on solely psychiatry. So they want to make sure that you're able to work in other environments as well.
Yep, I completely agree. For me, I just, you know, it's either, yes, four is a good number, but like three high quality letters of recommendation will play a lot more, like put a lot more value to your application versus, you know, four poor letters. So you want to pick your top three that the attending that you really trust and you know that will write you a good letter and will like vouch for you. So yeah, quality over quantity is the key.
Okay, I can start, or okay, I'll go real quick. So another question was, what were your expectations heading into residency? What surprised you? I think just, you know, that something which I'm sure everyone will be familiar with, called imposter syndrome. You come in, you know, you're officially, you know, you're a doctor, you can start practicing, you're starting putting orders, medications, people are coming to you for recommendations, consultations, and you're just looking around like, me? Wait, me? So just me, you know, it's there, it's real. Own, you know, you have to come to terms with it. It is something that does come to everyone's mind when they first start off. You know, you deserve here. You worked so hard to be here. You got, you know, everything, all of it shows. It shows in your work, it shows in all the examinations that you take. So make sure that you're very proud and that you do the best work that you can and understand that, yes, I am starting off fresh, but you know, this is training. So you are a resident doctor. So there, that's why the title is there. So just make sure, you know, have confidence in yourself, because it definitely shows when you interview patients and when you interview patients with their families. You want to make sure that, you know, you're coming in with a confident, you know, interview, you know, a patient interview, and that you're able, and it's okay to not know things. That's the reason also why you're in residency, but, you know, make sure that you acknowledge that it can be frightening at, you know, in the beginning, but you can do it. We all go through these motions, and I'm sure you will all be very great.
Yeah, I think some of the expectations that I had, particularly when I was looking for a residency program, was having a supportive program director. That was really how I ranked my programs, to be honest with you, based on, you know, after interviews and how I, you know, how I felt things went with the program director, and based on what the other residents had been saying about the program director. So far as them being supportive and being there and just being available, because residency is going to be tough. And so to have, you know, the person that's essentially the leader of our program to be in a position that, you know, that you can, you know, they're easy to talk to. They'll, you know, keep the structure, but then they'll also be there when you need them. Professionally, and even in some cases personally, because things happen. The other thing was just finding a program where I felt like I would have a good rapport with the other residents. You know, when you're at these virtual sessions, when we were interviewing, I think that was the first year they did virtual, and you were talking to the residents, you know, how they all got along, you know, things that they might have done. Unfortunately, it was COVID, so things weren't, you know, they weren't able to see each other as much, but they, you know, they did like a virtual game night and different things of that nature. So I was like, I wanted to be a part of a program where I felt like I could have those things, because I knew that the work was going to be there. Like Dr. Matadi said, it's going to be a lot of hard work. And so it's important to be somewhere where you feel like you have that support from your fellow residents and your program director and your program coordinator. I think the thing that probably surprised me the most was when I first started and I was on inpatient medicine and somebody called me doctor. And I was looking over my shoulder and I was like, who are they talking to? You know, I was like, you know, you forget for it. It sounds so weird. You know, you know that you graduate with this MD, but then to hear somebody, you know, say those words to you, and you're like, you're so shocked. So I think that was the one thing that kind of really caught me by surprise.
I can definitely relate to that. I called my patient doctor the first day, so that's how nervous I was. But I think the biggest thing that surprised me was just the transition from being a medical student to becoming a resident physician, having to call myself doctor as well. And you're just like doing with a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. You know, like, you are this patient's doctor now. You need to know everything about them. And I think having like hard conversations, you know, now you're going to have this hard conversation with patients and their families. Throughout like third and fourth year, I was like observing my attendings doing like having these hard conversations, like for an example, like cancer, you know, explaining it to the patient and to their families. But now I have to do this during my second week of residency. So it's a huge responsibility. Even like, you know, during my ICU block, I had to call time of death. And these were things I didn't do as a medical student. We just watch our residents do them, but now I'm doing them as a doctor. So it's definitely a big learning curve. It's very steep, but everyone's on the same playing field as you. Everyone feels the same way. And that's why it's really important to be a part of a program that's very supportive. Like Dr. Clark said, you know, the program support is really important. And I've truly been blessed where I've matched. Everyone is very supportive. All the co-residents that I work with on a daily basis are really, really kind, and, you know, check up on you, and they know how you're feeling as an intern. So yeah, it's very important.
Yeah, I would also say I was really surprised about the amount of support, like Dr. Clark and Dr. Fleiser said, like, at first, because, you know, you hear stories like, oh yeah, when you're a resident, there's nothing called a life. And actually, like, I have twin babies at home. And I was so shocked to find out when I told my attending, she's like, yeah, I also have twin babies, and she's an attending. And then there was another attending that had twins. So like they all relate, and they all understand, like, this is a time that where a lot of our residents build families, get married, get pregnant, you know, so have children, you know, they have family, they're like, life moves on. So I'm also very fortunate that my program understands that there's something called the life outside of residency. And so it was very easy for my program, for me and my program, to kind of decide, like, when I had to go to my doctor, my baby's doctor's appointments, or when I had to go get a wellness. Our program has wellness days. And so we do have a really good work-life balance. I'm very fortunate. That's one of the also reasons why I ranked it really high. And that's something that a prospective student should do too. Support. Almost all residency programs is going to give you the training you need. You're in a hospital, there are expectations. That's just the reality of it. But you need a program. It's very important to look at a program and say, hey, if you're not doing well, if you're struggling, that there are people to pick you up and kind of help you along the way. That was one of the biggest things that I looked for in trying to rank my programs. And I think that's like a really important thing that I tell my medical students that are with me, that are rotating with me. I give them the same exact advice. I think also, oh, sorry.
No.
I was gonna say, I think another thing that we wanted to discuss is, like, you know, the representation of, of medicine, and especially females in medicine. And I can start first, you know, being a Muslim American woman, and I have to, you know, work at the VA for my inpatient psychiatry rotation. I was terrified because, of course, you know, being Muslim, and these are all veterans that actually, you know, that went to Iraq and Afghanistan and such. I was really scared. I didn't know how people would look at me. Even at the VA, being, you know, a Muslim woman, it's very hard to be represented, especially in the healthcare field. So I was very surprised by how well respected I was, and how everyone was just really like looking to me to talk to me, to have me sit with them and them discuss their issues with me. So it's definitely eye-opening, and hopefully that we're able to improve in the representation of women in the healthcare field. I don't know if both of my colleagues want to comment on that as well.
Yeah, I would definitely say same thing, you know, being African-American female and a field that's still probably predominantly white male. And we're a small percentage in psychiatry as a whole, African-American community. So coming into the field and just showing, I guess, children or even other medical students or high school students that there is a possibility for you to be able to go into medicine and any field in medicine, you know, not just psychiatry that you choose. Just basically just representing. And even for, you know, the children in my family, like my niece, you know, she's a sixth grader now, so trying to figure things out so she can see, you know, me as a doctor. And, you know, she'll ask me questions about what that is. And she's seen me along the way. You know, she kind of jokes that I've been in school, you know, for a long time, which is true. But, you know, I just feel like I'm just setting an example of just the possibilities of, you know, career fields that could be. And I guess it's really good because a lot of my patients do look like me. And it's not a lot of psychiatrists in the field that look like me. So, you know, they're already asking me, well, do you have a card? And I was like, well, I'm first year resident, you know, so I'm still training, but I just appreciate them just giving me the opportunity to be able to help with their care, even as I continue to train and learn.
Thank you so much for sharing, Dr. Clark. I think for me, I think one of the things that was like a little frustrating during clinical rotations is I'd come up to my rotation with my white coat on and my badge that states medical student. I'd walk into a patient room and there were instances where I'd, you know, be mistaken for a nurse. And it was just a little upsetting because, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I have so much respect for our nurses. They are truly the backbone of our healthcare system. But to be mistaken for a nurse just because of my gender, I thought was a little inappropriate. My male colleagues have never dealt with that, so why am I dealing with this? And also, I think the pay gap is a little interesting that, you know, it still exists within medicine too. There is a pay gap between men and women physicians, and it's 2022, and it's just mind-blowing to me that, you know, this still exists. I came across a statistic recently where, compared to like over a 40-year career, women physicians earn less than $2 million compared to our male physicians. When we put in the same amount of work, when we are, you know, putting in that same amount of hard work, I don't think there should be a pay gap at all.
Yeah, I want to add to that. Like, I think, you know, especially when you're a new resident, the term is intern, you're an intern, and then you're a resident afterwards. And I didn't know that, of course, I just thought, okay, you're a resident. So, but I also noticed that a lot of, depending on where you are, depending on who you work with, you will get certain tasks like staff that will introduce you to the patient as, here's a student, even though you're not a student anymore. I got that a lot. And you know, it's hard to correct them while you're with the patient, but they know, I mean, I'm clearly wearing the white coat with the, you get your name tag that does say a doctor, sometimes it says resident doctor, but it's still there. That I think is still hard to grasp because again, like I said earlier, the imposter syndrome kicks in and says, yeah, I guess I'm not worthy to be called doctor yet, even though you are. I think we should be very proud of our titles. And I think, you know, like I keep saying, like we work really, really hard to get to where we are. I lived through it. You guys are all living through it. So there's no mistake about that. That is absolute fact. So I think it does kind of hurt your self-esteem a little bit, but you know what? You just keep doing what you're doing. And then eventually, I mean, hopefully we get into that system where we are, you know, just as respected as everybody else. And yeah, you're right. Dr. Sai said it is sad. Like, you know, we're in 2022 and we do see those things from time to time.
Okay, I think we had another topic, I guess. So maybe some of you guys have this question about, what did you learn over the past year as a resident that you wish you would have known, you know, after MATCH, you know, something that you wish you would have known?
Sure, I can start with this. So I remember like post-MATCH, I was just so scared. I remember like, oh my gosh, what, like, do I have to study everything again? Like I passed all my board exams, but like, do I need to like start studying for step three? And I kind of was studying as well. And I wish that I just knew that, you know, you're gonna feel lost on day one and you're just gonna learn throughout the process. So I wish I spent more time with family and friends and I didn't, you know, spend that 2 hours studying every day a little bit. I think that was the one thing that I learned, where like when you step in, you're stepping in fresh, everyone's on the same like level as you and you're all learning together and you're gonna learn throughout the process. So I don't think you need to study post-MATCH at all. Don't touch a textbook is my advice.
Yeah, I agree too. I think, and then just just be careful because like a lot of programs don't message you right away. And I was having like an absolute meltdown because I'm like, why is no one messaging me? I thought I got matched. I don't think they contact me until like a week after, or like the week after, like Friday, you know, and then like that Monday. So like, of course I'm like, oh my God, no one's contacting me. What do I need to do? I'm like, Dr. Kleiser said, everyone's going to know you're coming in. It's your first day. There's really nothing you can do to prepare yourself because every day is different for certain residents, certain attending. So you can't even expect the type of patients. You don't know what your schedule is. I definitely agree. I didn't do that much traveling because it was COVID and I couldn't really go anywhere. But like, I really wish I just kind of calmed down and just relax and let the process flow versus just constantly checking like my emails, making sure, you know, what if I'm missing something, like, don't worry. Like if there is something, they will contact you. They will make sure. And that's another thing too, that mindset of like from student to resident, we're employees now. So we have to stop I still have to teach myself like, okay, they need to take care of me. Like I'm their employee. So that mindset of like, okay, if there's something that I need, they should be able to like help me with that versus like, you know, when you're in medical school, you really don't have much say in like schedule, like, you know, like things, just this is the curriculum, this is what you have to follow. There really isn't much flexibility versus now that you're an employee of like a hospital, like you have an employer, you have a boss. So I keep forgetting that. I'm still, sometimes it's really hard to let go of that student phase.
Yeah, thanks ladies. I would definitely have to agree with you both. The biggest thing is to relax. Enjoy the time you have after you find out, you know, you've matched and where you're going. Spend that time with family, spend that time with friends, travel a little bit if you can. Do those things that you hadn't had a chance to do because you've been busy with medical school and applying for residency, and just be excited. To be honest with you, I think I built things up more than they were, just in the anticipation, trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to be prepared for? And like Dr. Matata said, you're not going to be prepared. So just accept that and just embrace it. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be hard, but it'll be a lot of fun. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I think every day, you know, at the end of my day, I'm like, oh, some days I'm totally exhausted. But I had a lot of fun. So I don't know, you know, people in many other professions that can say that, you know, they work hard, but they enjoy themselves every day. So just, you know, get excited for that.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to add on to this was, you know, like reflecting back, I would say it's really important to realize that, you know, when during the interview process, you're also interviewing the program. So we're all so scared, like, oh my God, what are they going to ask me? I hope I like represent myself the best way possible. But you're also interviewing that program and you're deciding as well, like, do you want to rank this program first or not? Like, will it be in your top three or not? So that's something, that's another mindset that you should have for those of you that are in your fourth year or that are going to be applying for the next cycle match, you know, that you are also interviewing this program. Like, does this program fit your needs, what you're looking for? Do they give you that support? So it's not just one-sided, it's both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just some things to think about when you're interviewing, you know, just being matched in California, a lot of people like just had that doubt of like, no, it doesn't really work. There's no such thing. I'm living proof that there is such thing. Make sure you reach out to the programs if you're interested in California, as well as any other state, but in California, and just make sure that, you know, this is a program that you want. You know, I fortunately was born and raised here, so I kind of know, I know the area really well. I know what I'm looking for. But definitely, I had a lot of like naysayers when I was applying, and even like when I got, even the day that I got matched, like I'm telling like even family, like they were telling me, you need to book a ticket right now to Atlanta, because that was like my number two. They were like, there's no way you're getting California. So like, we need to book a ticket. Like, that's it. We need to start thinking about getting an apartment. How who's going to take care of the babies? And I'm like, wait, it's not even, I don't even know. They're like, yeah, no, you're not getting help. Like, just put that stuff. And I was like, no, there's still a chance. So just have that confidence in yourself. I really, really believe that, like, if I listened to everybody, I probably wouldn't have applied, because of course it costs money to apply to, and California has like so many programs, like, especially in Southern California, like so many. And I didn't want to, you know, throw all my money away. And I just really believed in myself. And I had a lot that I was proud of. I went to UMHS. I got everything done. My clinical rotation was excellent. I loved the way that the clinical rotations were in Atlanta. I got all the experience I needed. I ended up doing some work in between during the pandemic, and I had that flexibility of being able to have kids, and I think that really it stands out. Your hard work does stand out, and your confidence. And that's why I keep saying, like, you have to really be confident, because they can tell from a mile away if you're not really confident. They're not going to want you. They want someone who knows that they're going to do a really good job in their program in their hospital. So definitely stay motivated, stay confident, and if you want to come to California, you can definitely come to California.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Matai. That actually was a good segue, because the next question was going to be, you know, how do you overcome self-doubt, and naysayers, as you mentioned, in your journey of heading to California, people, even your own family, questioning that. Dr. Kaiser, how to overcome, you know, self-doubt and potentially any naysayers in your process?
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, like, I mean, I think my go-to saying is, like, if I can do it, then anyone can do it. I was, like, never the smartest kid in my high school or throughout undergrad. The one thing I knew how to do really well was work hard. And during, like, medical school, I wanted to be able to work hard, but also, like, work smart, study efficiently. So I built up on these skills. And, you know, I just feel like hard work, sacrifice, dedication, they all pay off at the end. A good karma always comes your way. So, like, me personally, being a Canadian citizen, requiring a visa, you know, coming from a Caribbean medical school, like, all of these things, if I was to tell someone, they'd be like, there's no way. Like, you want neurology? Like, no, that's not going to happen. But, you know, I did it at the end of the day, and hard work pays off. So I think just if you're, like, passionate about something and you have your eye on something, then the sky is the limit. Like, you can totally achieve that. It's just, yeah, your hard work will definitely pay off.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have to agree with both you ladies. I think the other thing for me is that one of my biggest self-doubts was that we all know that psychiatry has become more and more competitive, you know, with each match year. And this year was probably no different for everybody. And so, to be honest with you, I knew I wanted to go into psychiatry, but, you know, there are people in the background, maybe you should try family medicine. You know, there's more programs available, more opportunity. And so you up your chances of getting matched. And I was to the point where I had two personal statements ready to go. I even went to informational sessions for family medicine and psychiatry. But for some reason, every time I went to the family medicine session, I was like, oh, it sounds nice, but it just didn't feel like where I was supposed to be. And the week we were supposed to, like, submit our application, I finally just made a decision that I'm just going to go all in, you know, no matter what, because I felt really strong about that's where I was supposed to go. That's where I wanted to match, because I didn't want to end up in a situation where I just matched for the sake of matching. I wanted to be in a residency that I truly had a passion for. And so I think that, you know, you just have to go with your gut. You know, you're going to have people, and mainly, you know, they'll make suggestions, you know, to try to help you, obviously hoping, you know, just to give you the best chances of success. But you really have to just go with what you feel confident about at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Agreed. Thank you so much, Dr. Clark, for sharing that. I think we have another question. How long are your residencies, and what are your plans after you complete residency?
Okay, so psychiatry is 4 years, but if you do, I know for my program, if you want to be child and adolescent psych fellowship, you finish in 3 years and then you do your fellowship on your fourth year. I would like to do emergency psychiatry. I love the ED. Psychiatry edition. It's really fun. I love spontaneity. I love being on my feet. I don't really like a long, uneventful days. I love to constantly be think on my toes, you know, try to admit as many as I can and try to see all the patients that come in. Harbor UCLA, which is in Torrance, which is in Los Angeles, is like the number one busiest emergency room in California. All patients they get from LAX, which is our one of the busiest airports, goes straight to Harbor UCLA. So we see a lot of interesting cases. And what's even more great about this, about my program, is if they come from another country and they need to be escorted back, guess who gets to escort them back to their country? We do. And we get a free extra stay at wherever they, whatever country they're from. And there are residents that went to Australia, the Middle East, South America, Africa, you name it, almost every country, including Russia, I want to say, yep, other states as well, of course, domestic flights. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting field, and I honestly fell in love with it. Definitely kept me on my toes, and I love the hours. I think it's very doable. I think, and then that was the question, right? And that was it, right? That was the first part. Yeah. So that's it for me.
Dr. Masadi mentioned the time frame. For me, our program also does the 3 years if you go into a child and adolescent fellowship. So that is my path. I kind of let that be known from day one that I'm interested in going into child and adolescent psychiatry. And so that, so ultimately they kind of adjust your schedule second, third year to accommodate that program. I just always had the interest in the child and adolescent population, combining that with mental health care. It just seemed like the perfect marriage for me. So I'm excited. I haven't had much exposure the first year, but the second year I will get into working, you know, in the inpatient, outpatient setting for child and adolescent psychiatry. So I'm excited to at least get my, you know, first feel on that population, but that's pretty much where I'm planning to go next.
So awesome to hear, Dr. Clark. For me, neurology is 4 years. The first year is kind of like a transitional year. It's pretty much all internal medicine. And it's surprising that we, like as neurology interns, we do more internal medicine than the internal medicine residents. So, you know, we have like 3 blocks of like floors, 2 blocks of ICU, 1 block of night float. So we're pretty much doing all bread and butter medicine first year. And then to like entering into PGY2, which all majority of neurology programs do, is something called neuro boot camp. So we kind of review our neuroanatomy and neuroscience again, and then we like jumpstart into neurology. So I'm really looking forward to that now that we're, you know, heading towards PGY2, which is insane how time flies so fast. But yeah, that's how long neurology is. Now in terms of the future, I'm open to both inpatient, outpatient, like as a neurohospitalist. I've also thought about some fellowships. There's a wide range of fellowship opportunities within neurology. Currently, I do have an interest in stroke and headache medicine. So those are the top two that I'm like looking into right now.
I think the next question was, what questions would you recommend medical students ask about programs they're interested in? I think one question that I would always ask in, on interview is, what kind of support system do you have in your program? Meaning like, if it's like, how do you take care of your first year residents? Who do we get to go to if you have any concerns? Is there like a algorithm or is there like a support system that you guys have within your program? And I've had a program say, actually, we don't really have one. Like there was, so it's not a clear answer. I know sometimes it's like, well, obviously they're going to say, yes, I'm telling you, I had one program that was like, well, not really. I mean, if there's any, like if someone's struggling or if someone's having a hard time, it happens. So you want to make sure that you ask those questions. You want to make sure that you're going to be supported. You're going to be taken care of. You're going to be burnt out no matter what specialty you go into. There is no such thing as an easy residency. It's all hardworking. It's all a lot of hours. That's why there's that ACGME 80-hour requirement. You're gonna end up, I mean, I'm in psychiatry and I've worked up to 80 hours a week. So it's not going to be, you know, but we are trained for this. So you want to make sure that you're in a program that's able to help you in case you need a wellness, a half day, or you need to go and take care of some issues. You need help with like maybe a certain rotation is really tough on you. I have a co-resident that has a really tough time with inpatient medicine, so she wants to make sure that a senior's with her to kind of guide her through a lot of things. Now, a lot of programs just kind of let you go, but there are programs that really do have that support system behind you. So that's one important question I would ask.
I think another question, I guess, obviously, if this is important to you, as far as just the overall schedule, you know, if you have overnight shifts, weekends, just kind of how things are laid out, just to get a feel for like what the work-life balance is going to be, if that's important to you, having some work-life balance at our program. A lot of our rotations, like at least in the first year, you don't work a lot of weekends, except when you're in inpatient medicine and there's no night float. But in other programs, that's not the case. So you need to be aware of what the expectations are of the individual programs and what the expectations you have for yourself as far as your training environment. Outside of that, obviously, the training is going to be similar in terms of exposure the first year to medicine, like as she mentioned, neurology and inpatient outpatient psychiatry. So just understanding that dynamic of the workload and what you anticipate to be your workload, so that there's really no surprises about that when you get in there from that standpoint, because it does vary from program to program.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for me, you know, I asked a lot of questions to the residents because they were, you know, they've lived through it and they were truly, I felt like they would truly represent what the program was all about. So asking about like, what is a typical day like, you know, on a day to day here? What Dr. Matadi said, like, do we receive that support or do you receive that support from the residency program? Like, do you guys do wellness days or not? You know, so those are all really good questions to ask. And then for like program directors and faculty members, I used to ask this one question where like, you know, what is an ideal residency candidate to you? Like, what is an ideal resident candidate to you that would be matching into your program? Or like, what is something that you would want your residents to learn from you? So that would kind of tell me like who I'm going to be working with in the future. Like, what is their mindset? Like, what would they want me to learn from them? So a couple of things like that is what I can recall. There were a ton of questions, and it's really important to ask questions to program directors and faculty members and learn as much as you can about the program. And I think we all had a different experience while we were doing virtual interviews, and we couldn't actually go in person. So the only thing we had was just asking questions, really, and getting to know as much as we possibly could about the program. So, yeah.
Oh my God, I cannot echo that bigger enough. Like, you must, like, I think even if you don't have a question, ask a question because it shows you're interested. I actually participated in interviews for applicants this year. They actually offered me to be part of the interviewing process. Let me tell you, in the discussions and the debriefs, if someone didn't ask a question, automatically they weren't even brought up as far as an interesting candidate because they never really represented themselves. So like I said, even if you don't really have a question, ask about what type of EMR do you guys use? What, Dr. Kleiser said, what does it look like on a regular day, an inpatient? You can ask, what is your call schedule like? Those are real, like, just ask a question. Obviously, don't ask questions that are on the website because then it makes it seem like you're not doing your research. But there are always questions that you can ask that's really not written down, like such as, support system, EMRs. A lot of times programs, I think most programs don't put that on there. What I like to always look for also in a program, and I know this doesn't sound like a big deal right now, but the benefits and salaries, things like that. Now that you're a first year resident, I promise you that will be the one thing you're going to be like, man, like, do you guys offer housing stipends? In California, we offer housing stipends. UCLA offers $12,000 a year. It's just a check every year. Here's $12,000, pay your rent. My program offers 6,000 right now. And I wish like I cared enough to like, you know, because when you're a student, you just want to get in. But when you're a resident, you're like, what are the things that you want to look for? So I honestly like benefits. If you have a family, if you know that financially you're going to be struggling, try to, like, that is a very important factor. If you can decide between two programs and they're very similar, look at their benefits, look at their salary. It does, you will feel it when you're working 80 hours and getting paid very minimally. It does hurt the heart. So definitely put that in your differential, but obviously, I mean, if that isn't really a big issue, you can put it on the bottom, but definitely consider that if you're having a hard time deciding between programs.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with both of those. I think we have another question is, how or does your program support residents and faculty who are underrepresented in medicine?
Yeah, I can. I'm really quickly. I think I've already said it before. I am a female Muslim woman that has twin babies. That's very underrepresented. And they are very, I'm very well supported by my program and by the attendings at the hospitals that I rotate at. They can all relate. Everyone, at least one person has a child in the attending world. So people know, they understand, you have commitments that you have to attend to. As long as you're responsible and you're not taking up a lot of time, they do accommodate you for my program at least.
Yeah, we, you know, at my program, we receive a lot of support as well. We have, like, we're given personal time off as well. We get a total of 20 hours throughout the year. Paid time off is also a thing. You know, they like want to work with you ahead of time to make sure that you get the week that you want off. They're willing to work with you regarding that. We also have a couple of residents that are Muslim. I'm Muslim myself. So, you know, they will, when catering food, they'll always make sure to ask, you know, like, oh, do you need halal or kosher food or vegetarian options or whoever, you know, whatever dietary preferences you have. They all consider that, you know, they all ask about that. So it's really nice to, you know, have that diversity and inclusivity within the program, that they care. So that's something.
Yeah, and holiday, I forgot that too. It was, so Muslims have like two holidays a year. They actually let me, there's, I guess, like a code where you can actually take time off for a holiday, like a, you know, a religious holiday. So I thought I would never get that day off, especially in residency. So that's probably one other thing that surprised me, is that they're very accommodating to things like that as well.
Yeah, I would have to agree. A lot of things, like I said, there's flexibility for us in how we use our vacation time, as long as we give 30 days notice. And in some cases, they're a little bit more flexible in the case of emergency. We get a personal day. We also get wellness days every quarter. And that's not vacation. We have to, you know, everybody's excused from their programs, and we just all do activities together. You know, something usually winter, spring, summertime, have a wellness day. So just a way to support us. And our, you know, our program director, she's always checking in with us, emailing us, texting us. I can text her if I have a question. I have her personal cell phone number. So if I have a question, or if I have a concern, or I need to talk, you know, offline about anything, I can shoot her a message and we can schedule a time to talk. And even like my chief residents, they're constantly checking in on us. Today we actually had a mishap about what a conference we're supposed to go to on Friday. So the chief resident, she called me, you know, just wanted to get understanding what was going on, because it was really for the first years. And, you know, she got everything cleared up for us today. So everybody is just super supportive, accessible at all times. So that's just something else to be on the lookout for when you're looking for programs and asking those questions too.
I think there's a question of what is a day in the life of a FGOA1 psych resident? So, of course, it depends on the type of rotation. For your first year, for my program, you do 4 months of inpatient medicine, 4 months of inpatient and outpatient neurology. You do 2 months of outpatient family medicine, and you do 4 months of inpatient psychiatry. It's more of your second year. You do more of the inpatient psychiatry. I can tell you with my program, I don't have to do weekends when I do inpatient psychiatry or outpatient medicine or outpatient psychiatry. The only times I had to do weekends was inpatient medicine. So that's one thing that I loved about the program. So it really does depend on the program, on how heavy their call schedule was like. Actually, I had no call. I have no call. The only time I had call was during emergency psychiatry, which is 1 month, and it was only twice the whole month. So it really does depend on the program, but I know with psychiatry, it's less call heavy, more, and it's more work-life balance for sure. Typical day in inpatient psychiatry for me ended at 4:30, or earlier. It depends on whether you had, like hearings or things like that. Or if new patients came in. Outpatient, very, very, like till 4:30 as well. Inpatient medicine, I would say, in Spain, to like 7 o'clock, I think, maximum. And I was there from 6 a.m. I'm always there 6 a.m., even in inpatient psychiatry. That's just who I am. I love to be there very early. There are patients we have to see. And for me, I need to get on top of it. I mean, so it also depends on your rotation and your program, but it is encouraged, which means you must be there at 6 a.m. The saying is always stuck with me, and I will forever use it and follow it, is if you're 15 minutes early, it means you're on time. And I am a very, very early, I'm always early to everything. And it really does show in all of your rotations and all of your in residency as well. And it makes a really big difference in your evaluations. Don't forget, residency, you're being evaluated your first year. it's not like a straight pass. They evaluate you and they determine whether or not you move on. So you can't just say, okay, this is it. Like I'm contracted. There's no way I'm getting out of this unless, you know, nope. They watch, you know, do you come right before rounds or do you come ahead of time and see the patients before rounds? So all of that gets into consideration. Professionalism is a really big thing in evaluation. So make sure, I mean, those are easy stuff, right? Like these aren't the things that really should give you anxiety. It's very easy to show up on time and see your patients. It's very easy to be respectful, cordial, and very kind to others. So those things go a long way in your evaluation.
Yeah, I would agree. Our schedule is a little, just ever so slightly different. Instead of 4 months of neurology, we have 2 months of neurology. And my schedule was a little bit more unique from my other residents in that a couple of my second year rotations got pulled to my first year. So for me, first year, I did clinical liaison, which is typically a second year rotation. And I'm on forensics right now, which is technically a second year rotation. So it's just kind of how things worked out. But for me, it was kind of interesting because I came right off of medicine. So I did inpatient, outpatient medicine, neurology, and rolled right into clinical liaison, my very first psych rotation. And it's a second year rotation. So it was at first attending, I was with, he was like, well, I've never worked with a first year before, but you know, but we got along and he was just like, and by the end of it, he was like, I can't believe you're only a first year. So, but it's like the perfect marriage of, it was like the ideal because I had just came off of medicine. So I kind of had that mindset and being on a hospital, working in an emergency room and on the floors, I was pretty comfortable. So, so I just kind of rolled in there and it was just a matter of just understanding what was the expectations from the psychiatry standpoint. But, and I think that's the one thing that I tend to take into every service that I go into, just understanding what the expectations are of that particular service that I'm on at that moment. What's the expectations for as a resident, as a first year resident, and, you know, from the attendings and the other residents that I work with. And that typically makes things a lot easier for me, you know, just kind of learning those things first. And then the next thing is who to talk to about what, you know, knowing who your go-to people are, nurses, social workers and so forth. But, and that's kind of my formula, so to speak, when I've transitioned from one rotation to another.
Dr. Kreisel, what's your day like? I know you said you do more inpatient than internal medicine. Oh my God, I can't.
Yeah, so, you know, internal, I my day and on floors, it starts at 6:45. And then if I'm not long call, it ends at 3, which means it'll end around 3:34 because sign up takes some time. And then on long call days, I'm scheduled from 6:45 to 6 p.m. But then again, you know, sign up takes a little bit of time, staffing a patient. So I'll probably be out by 6:30 or 7 some days. So yeah, hours are long on floors. ICU are really long hours as well. You know, you start at 6, you end at 6. But we get 3 electives within our first year. So having like a nice elective opportunity is great to kind of just wind down a little bit. So I had done endocrine, which was nice. The hours were really nice. I also did my inpatient psychiatry, which I really loved. And the hours were great as well. Got to do a couple of consults and round on the patients as well. So it varies. It varies day to day. But yes, we are very inpatient heavy on neurology.
So I think we had something come up. I guess a lot of people were having questions about specifics about the match process, how to improve their chances of getting into a certain program. And wanted to ask, I guess, I don't know, got Patrick McCormick. He was, I mean, I can attest to that myself, was definitely helpful in helping me prepare for the match process even before it started. He sent tons of emails on questions that I had and I didn't even know I had, until he provided the information, and very responsive. I mean, I would email him back personally. And if he didn't have the answers to those questions, he definitely was ready to defer me to whoever could answer my questions going through that process. They were very supportive along the way. So if you have any questions or concerns, definitely make sure you be on the lookout for his emails because they will be coming up for the next match after this one is over. They're usually, you know, he's pretty much on it. He provides tons of information that and useful resources throughout the process.
Yeah. Can I just jump on that and say Patrick like saved my life. Like I was met, he's very personalized. I mean, he helped me with this whole California journey. I mean, I was asking him questions since I was in Maine. How can I get to California? Can you tell me how I'm going to get to California? And every like 6 months I would follow up with him. I would give him certain links. He would give me certain links. I would do some, like, I remember I got an interview request on a program that didn't respond. Like I was waiting for them to like show up on the interview and they never showed up. And I was like, I called him first. I said, what do I do? Do I email them back? Do I call them? What is the chances? How often does this happen? I mean, he literally like made my life so much less stressful. He answered all my questions, even answers that we didn't know yet because California is fairly new. We work together as a team. And let me tell you, he is such a huge, huge, huge asset to UMHS. And there are schools that don't have that type of support. I mean, there are huge class sizes. I mean, it's really hard to kind of tailor one by one on how to get matched and what specific questions you have. But Patrick really, 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 really made it happen for me. So definitely reach out to him. He was absolutely amazing. I mean, I just call him and he answers the phone. I email him, he answers right away. I mean, absolutely stunning. I mean, this was like, he saved my life into getting into residency for sure.
No, absolutely agree. Patrick is a huge asset in our, you know, at UMHS. Like before the match process even started, like we were getting emails like a year in advance about like, you know, what this was going to look like and what we should look into and, you know, when are certain conferences happening. And we're just really lucky to receive that support from him. He works really, really hard. Me personally, like he even read my personal statement for me, you know, like how many people do you know at, you know, whatever school that will do that for you. But like he like reviewed my application, reviewed my personal statement. He is very responsive through emails. He works really hard and he truly wants us to succeed. You know, like happiness to him is happiness when we're really happy. So he was definitely a backbone throughout this entire process and couldn't have done it without him, truly.
Yeah. We wanted to check in with Dr. Mungley and the St. Kitts students to see if there was any questions from anyone in the auditorium right now. All righty. Well, if there's no questions from any of you guys in St. Kitts, we want to thank you, Dr. Mungley. Thank you to the UMHS staff. Thank you for everybody in the audience that's virtual via live stream today for coming in with all of your questions and for just listening to our stories and allowing us a space to share our experience with you guys today.
Yeah, and we definitely gave out our information if you guys want to reach out. I know that there are a lot of students that reach out to me via social media, but I'm not really on top of my social media right now. So email is best, and we definitely forwarded that information to the UMHS team. So definitely reach out, and then we can always have that connection because I don't know if we already mentioned it before, but, you know, residents really have a really big segue into interview season as far as, like, which people we can pull in to interview. So make sure that you do connect with your fellow graduates, fellow residents, because they do it. We do always help our UMHS alumni for sure. You guys are our family and we want to extend that to you guys as well.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And yes, feel free to reach out. Me personally, I can kind of give that, you know, Canadian aspect of like throughout the entire match process. So I can talk a little bit about that. I've also taken the Canadian board exams along with the USMLE exam. So anyone that needs guidance regarding the CARMS match, the NRMP match, feel free to reach out to me. I'll be more than happy to help out. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.